We just got back from conducting outreach on the Justice Ride, and now we're debriefing. Join us. We are Created Equal, and we're inviting you to debrief with us. Hey, y'all. I'm Lexi.
Hey, everyone. It's Seth, and we are on the Justice Ride. We are in Florida now. We're not in the GoPro closet. We're in someone's office. We just found it at a church where we're staying on the Justice Ride with 80 students.
And joining us, I don't know.
It's been a long day in the sun, the Florida sun.
Oh, yes. I am scorched. I think most of the people here are...
The back of my legs are scorched, my calves. Yeah, it's kind of painful.
I know. All I felt was fire on the
back
of my
legs. And some justice writer said, oh, Seth's receding hairline is burned.
Oh, so, Seth.
You know, it's a reality.
You know, I just see the top of your forehead. It's just a continuation. It's okay. But yes, we're all a little tired. So yes. Forgive me for, I know the many mistakes I'm going to make in the next 20 minutes, but bear with us, please, y'all. But we have a justice writer on with us today, and that is Noble. Noble is a second year justice writer. You were on your first justice ride last year and are back with us this year. Thank you so much, Noble, for coming on.
Yeah, no problem. I'm happy to be here.
Noble, how old are you?
I am 15. I had to think about that.
Oh, so you went on your first justice ride when you're 14 years old? Wow, Noble. Okay,
yeah,
okay.
For some reason, I thought I was 15 on my first one.
So did we.
You must have lied on... Okay.
People were listening. You have to be 15 to come on the justice ride.
I don't understand how that happened because I thought I was 15.
Okay, well,
you know,
we will have to teach him a math lesson of how to calculate his age from the date he was born, but we can do that later on and not in this podcast, but...
We're not a math podcast. You don't come to us for that.
No, for sure we are not, and we are not a lot of other things as well, but today we were on the campus of the University of Central Florida, which is in Orlando, Florida, and it was busy. It was back to normal after COVID. You know, last year during the Justice Ride, it wasn't as busy, but this year we were back for normal outreach. So Noble, kind of go over, how was outreach like today? It's the third day of outreach. How did that go for you?
It was good. So I was stationed at the beginning until like the last hour or so in a spot where I got a lot of traffic. People coming to and from. So I got a lot of good conversations. I approached a lot of people, a lot more people than I did in the last hour. Had a lot of good conversations. The people there were actually pretty receptive. I didn't meet many that were nasty. They mostly would either just not talk or would talk and would be very nice about it. So that was cool.
Nice. And so, Noble, I'm curious, so what's your experience like? We didn't come to... Last year in your first justice ride, we did not come to UCF, I don't believe. Although we did. No?
We did.
We did.
We did.
Okay. So maybe you've been there before. Either way, that's not really relevant. My question is intended to be, what is your experience like being a second time rider coming on your second trip? Anything different from you, your perspective?
I understand a lot more because I've had more training since then. I've attended more pro-life teachings and hearings, so I have a better understanding, I think, hopefully, of what I'm arguing and how to argue it, and a better sense of the arguments that I hear and how to respond to them.
Well, I mean, you definitely do. I guess I shouldn't say I don't know that you didn't then last year, but overhearing your conversations then and also this week on the road, it's clear to me that when you're going on campus, when I hear you talking, you know what you're talking about. You know how to present the evidence in a way that is attractive, that makes sense, that's winsome. And that's why I think in this conversation we wanted to debrief with you on, that you just told everyone on the bus, we're now off the bus, we're on the campground where we're staying. It was a cool conversation that I think all of our listeners would benefit from hearing about how you were able to kind of turn a conversation to eventually lead to someone changing their mind.
Yeah.
And for everybody who has never been on a justice ride, what we do is after outreach, we have a little debrief session where we have anybody who wants to go up on to the front of the bus and share on the mic a story that they had. If they changed somebody's mind on abortion or if they just had a weird experience or whatever they want to share with everybody. So Noble came up and he shared the story he's about to share with y'all. And we were like, wow. That's very interesting. And Noble, you did a great job handling that conversation. So I guess we should just get into it.
Yeah, let's jump in.
So Noble, what was the conversation that we are also curious to hear about?
Okay, so it started not with me, but actually with someone else that he walked past. And they started with the normal tension getter of like, hey, hi, what do you think about abortion? And he was one of the people at first who kind of yelled over his shoulder as he was walking past. He didn't pay too much attention. He was just like, it's not my issue. Like, I'm a man. That's not my problem. And as he was walking away, because I felt like I should say something other than have a nice day, which is what I'd been saying, I just kind of yelled after him, is slavery your issue? Because he was white. And he turned around and he was like, what did you say? And I was like, is slavery your issue? Like, you're white and slavery wouldn't have really affected you. So how is it that you get to have an opinion about slavery and yet men don't get to have an opinion about abortion? And he actually stopped walking and turned around and came back.
Mm.
And we continued the conversation for maybe 20 minutes. It wasn't a short conversation. But, it eventually led to a mind change. And his one issue, like the biggest problem that he was having, was at first, like, admitting that the preborn were human. But that, I mean, we got over that fairly quickly. And then his biggest thing of all was, like, the rape scenario. Mm-hmm. If a mother is raped, like, and she doesn't want the child, then how should, like, why should we be able to force her to have that child?
And, yeah, how did you respond to that?
Oh, gosh, I have to remember.
It's hard in the hot sun, right?
Yeah.
So he was saying that if a woman has been assaulted, that that's why abortion's okay, because it's justifiable in that situation. Uh-huh. Do you recall kind of anything that you brought, came to mind that you might have shared with him?
I kind of went over, like, how does that justify murder? And in the scenario of rape, like, I went over the three people that are involved, mother, father, child, and how the father is the criminal, obviously, and should be punished. And the mother is a victim, and you obviously would not want to punish the victim. And he said, yeah, of course not. That'd be completely counterintuitive.
Mm-hmm.
And then I, like, brought up the question of, then isn't the baby a victim? Like, the baby didn't choose whether it wanted to be born that way.
Yeah.
And even people that we know now, unless we know for certain, we don't know whether they were conceived of love or of hate. And I was like, I don't know if you were conceived that way. But I don't think, like, I don't hold you as any less valuable because of that, because I don't know, maybe you were conceived in a rape situation, but I don't think that subtracts or detracts or anything from the value of your life or the right that you have to that life.
That's really powerful, Noble. I think that's really important what you did there, not only responding to apologetically why we know that rape does not justify abortion. Like you said, there are three people involved. Two of them are victims. The mother is the primary victim. The baby is a secondary victim of the assault, then the father is the criminal, right? The one who committed the crime. And that's important, but also you were speaking to the point that we see all people as valuable regardless of how they're made. So whether you're made in love or in violence, you matter by definition of being human. So I think that was really important what you did there. And so I'm curious, so when you relayed this to him, did he change his opinion on abortion? What was he thinking at the end of the conversation?
At the end of the conversation, it went on for a while because, like, there was a point at which I thought that it was going to be like a circular conversation,
mm-hmm.
and we weren't going to get anywhere, and that I was just going to have to cut off the conversation and just tell him, like, agree to disagree. But we managed to have a breakthrough. I don't even remember exactly what it was, but we managed to get out of the loop of, like, whatever, like, circular reasoning we had been in. And by the end of the conversation, he had actually changed his mind on abortion completely and believed that it was wrong in every circumstance and should never be allowed or justified.
Wow. And that's why you have to continue some conversations sometimes,
right?
Even if you want to get out of it or if you don't think it's productive. Obviously, sometimes you cut it off. But, well, I think what was so interesting is about how you got his attention to mm-hmm. come into the conversation. Because especially on our Justice Ride, we have 80 people out there with us. We have them separated in two different parts of the campus. So basically 40 people in that one area. So if somebody's walking past, they're walking past quite a few of our team members. And they're asking them, what do you think about abortion and things like that? And so one of the justice writers was kind of like rejected and he didn't want to have a conversation with them, but you got him to be pulled back in and talking about it. And so, share again, like, why did you think, like, oh, this is a really good thing for me to say right now to get him to stop and talk?
He did say after, like, during the conversation that he had talked or been approached by, I think, three or four Justice writers before that. And so I it's almost kind of understandable.
Fifth writer's the charm, I guess. I don't know.
I guess so. Yeah, he was kind of fed up, I think, by being asked the same question so many times. And it might have been a mix of something different or something that he maybe hadn't heard before. But that was an argument that I've heard before. And that was, I remember the first time I heard it, I didn't know how to respond to it. And I don't know if it was Seth, I don't know if it was you that I asked how I should respond to that, but someone took the time to teach me how, what are the best responses to that argument. And I've used that one several times before, and it's always been really, it's never been something that they've ignored. They've always responded to it in some way, whether good or bad, but normally good.
Well, that's really cool. I mean, so we got back from the camp, from the outreach, and we had these small groups we were debriefing. And in my small group, they were asking, what do you do when someone says, I don't have time or I don't want to talk to you, and just running away? And I think, what you did so well for someone who's 15 years old is having this really well-crafted argument distilled down to a simple question to ask someone. That takes a lot of experience, you would think, but I know you've had experience doing this and going to trainings, but that's really important because people, I think, sometimes they're stuck on the tactics. How do I get someone to stop and talk to me? Mm. And it was your choice of how you phrased that question that was so powerful to him. Not just, what do you think about slavery? But you were asking him, do you get to have an opinion on slavery, right? Making it personal for him.
Yeah. And so right after you said that, he was obviously stunned enough to come back and have a conversation with you about it. But I think we should kind of talk about this. I find this all the time. And I think you probably have heard that same argument over and over and over that I'm a man, I don't have an opinion on it, or I shouldn't have an opinion on it, or it doesn't matter what I think. And so Seth, when we hear that, what Noble did was a great tactic to use, but what worldview, or why do people think that way? Why do guys think that I shouldn't have an opinion on it just because I don't have a uterus or just because I can't get pregnant?
It's really hard to know why. I think it's a fantastic question. There's so many different cultural elements coming to bear on men that lead them to have this conclusion. And I think the couple of things that would come to mind is, number one, a lot of men have been told for years, you don't get to have a say. And so they finally backed out. Okay, fine, you have your say. I'm just going to sit back. But I do think also, we talked about in some episode, was it the toxic masculinity at Planned Parenthood, the guy who was saying I just murdered my kid, it's not a big deal. And I think about men who actually benefit from being pro-abortion because they're able to have no responsibilities for their actions, right? And so some take that default position of neutrality because they think that it really isn't a man's issue. I think others actually kind of enjoy that neutrality because they like the results of that they get to have their choices without consequences of being stuck with a baby or stuck with paying a woman's child support for her baby.
And I think what's so interesting is that there are some moral situations that it is socially acceptable to have a hard stance against. And if you don't hold to that hard stance, then you're actually really immoral. But then there are other things that people are like, just let people do what they want to do. Don't worry about it. Let whatever, if they want to do it, then it's right for them. They turn to the moral relativism. But in other situations, it's like, how dare you say that you can do what you want to do or you have the option or whatever. And so it's kind of a really good thing to point to something like slavery that most of our society, most of our culture will look to as a moral wrong, absolutely, to help draw out the claim or the position from inside them that abortion is always wrong.
That's exactly right. So, you're right. So abortion is seen as a issue where, your body, your choice, you decide whatever, you do you. Abortion, right, they say. Human slavery is not that. Chattel slavery, we all look back as immoral, as wrong. And so this, you're saying it so well, that moral relativism, for anyone as a review, is just the idea that you get to decide what is right and wrong for yourself. There's no objective moral law that bears on all of us. You get to pick. And so what Noble did, though, is say, you know what? You're not really a moral relativist. Noble just schooled the guy in relativism, but artfully, in a way the guy didn't know he was being educated, because he was saying, you know what? I don't have an opinion. I shouldn't say anything. And Noble said, you know what? You're not really a relativist like you think you are. Mm-hmm. You really believe some things are wrong. Human slavery is one of them. But what about this other thing here? What about abortion? And that's powerful.
Yeah. Noble, have you ever, I'm sure you have. Have you ever talked to somebody who used the argument, like talked to a guy who said, I shouldn't have an opinion on it before other than this guy?
Yeah, definitely. Actually, multiple times today, I think.
Oh, really?
I had two other, well, it's not even mostly, it's not the guys that say that. It's the women who say, like, mm-hmm. you should not have mm-hmm. an opinion because you are a man. Mm-hmm. And, like, the same argument can pretty much be used there. If right. like if you're sure. white, do you get to have an opinion about slavery?
Yeah.
Like it works either way. And I have, and it's always a good, at least for me, it's always been a good, I don't know, kind of
argument yeah. to use. Yeah. Just out of curiosity, how does that work whenever you're telling the girls? Do you have a different, did you get a different response than how this guy reacted to when you said that?
Yes. Yeah,
tell us about that.
I talked to another girl who kind of used that same argument. She was very aggressive and she was like, you can't have an opinion about this because you're a man and you can never know what it's like to be a woman and be pregnant like this. And I was like, well, that's true, but you can't know what it's like to be a slave because, you know, you're not black and therefore you wouldn't have been a slave. She's like, yeah, well, I mean, that's not really the same thing. And she was very insistent upon not changing the subject except when she wanted to, because at a different point in the conversation, she tried to go off on a whole tangent of like relating abortion to puppy abortions and asking me if I was okay with those or if I was okay with capital punishment, all that kinds of stuff. So the argument itself, I don't think, is a flawed one, but the way that people receive it can definitely vary.
Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, it's up to them if they're going to accept the good, sound argument that you use, like in every argument we give. But that's just interesting, the comparison to how most women who use that same argument mm-hmm. compared to most men. I feel like it's freeing for men almost in a way when they realize that, oh, yeah, I can actually have a stance on that. Do you agree with that, Seth?
Definitely. I think so. I think that just reminding people that you get to have a choice here. You get to have a choice. Sorry. That choice of words, right? You get to have a say, an opinion, a perspective on this is really powerful and empowering to them. And I think a lot of men are waking up today realizing they believed the lie. They didn't have a say. Now their baby was aborted. And so they are grieving not only the loss of their baby, but realizing I didn't do the thing I should have done, which was advocate for my child because I thought I didn't have a say.
And we see with the Justice Ride, there are so many young men who are joining us this week who recognize that they do have a say and that they actually have a moral responsibility to combat abortion.
So let's start on you, Lexi. So Noble and I are guys. We have a couple other ladies in the room, like producer Esther and Claire is with us today. But so Lexi, you looking at Noble, looking at all of the young Justice Rider men, like, so they are seen as the picture, the face of toxic masculinity. And I know we hate that phrase. We've talked about it a bit before. But so when you see men who are coming forward to actually go start these conversations, I know it's hard for you to put yourself in the shoes of young women on college campuses. But what do you think about these men? And like, what does that relate to the world that men are caring about this?
Well, I think in a way, it like having men outside Planned Parenthood, sidewalk counseling, even if the women don't think that they want men to be standing up for their preborn babies, I think deep down they do. I think a lot of times, especially women who just think it's my body, my choice, I want to do what I want, or they have suffered pain from having an abortion themselves, they may blame men for that. They may blame the person who got them pregnant, even if it was their boyfriend at the time or their husband or whatever. But I think it's really powerful for them to see men who love them and care for them and want the best for them and best for their babies. And I think that is really helpful for them to not only see women out there, because I think that we're traitors for being against abortion, but I think it's good for them to see men who are strong and bold in their stance, but also compassionate and loving towards them and towards their preborn babies.
That's well said. That's very well said. And I think that's really why it's exciting to see not only guys, and when we have guys, or we have guys and girls in the justice ride, right?
Yeah.
But typically we think of men being the ones who are told you shouldn't have an opinion. And it's exciting seeing people who are not believing that lie.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is a moral creature. Every human being is a moral creature. And God made us to have opinions and form opinions. And so morality is not only exclusive to one sex. That's a silly idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think it's great that we are here. We're going to be recording more during the Justice Ride. But Noble, thank you for joining us for this, for sharing that conversation. We have more to go. Are you ready to go in the next couple days?
Yeah, definitely. I'm excited. Yeah.
Nice. And you come back again next year, maybe?
Of course.
Oh, absolutely. All right. Well, thank you all for joining us for this. We'll have more conversations. But until next time, please remember to go out and have your own conversations like Noble did. Think of creative questions you can ask people. And also, please watch us on social media. Go to @debrief with us on Instagram. Follow our videos, leave some comments, and send us a review on our podcast. Leave us a 5-star review if you like it. If you don't, then I suppose you shouldn't be listening, right? All right, but that's okay. You can send us a comment too. You can also find us at createdequal.org. Thank you for joining us. We are Created Equal, and this has been The Debrief.